It's a pleasure to have you, the listening audience, to be with us today. I am Dr. Arliss Wood, psychologist, chair of the Public Education Committee of the Montana Psychological Association, along with co-host Dr. Suzanne Wood, speech-language pathologist. We present this health and happiness program each Monday evening at 7 p.m. Montana or Mountain Standard Time. It also airs on Thursday mornings. We thank KGVM 95.9, Bob Wall, KGVM radio personality and engineer, and the listening audience for the support. The purpose of this program is to inform our Gallatin Valley community and all who also listen on the internet, kgvm.org, about mental health issues. On occasion, there are other important political and social topics. Hopefully, the effect of this program is improved health and happiness. Now, today's program, Dr. Suzanne Wood will introduce.
Good evening. More or less 40 years ago, I returned to the University of Oklahoma to attend graduate school, a new requirement of my possession, or profession, that is, as speech-language pathologist. I was daunted and invigorated all at the same time, going back to school. One required and highly emphasized class was professional ethics. Under the national guidelines for care was a new component, the treatment of voice variations needed for transgender patients. It was a straightforward treatment protocol, and not one person contested its value. It was a fact that these clients required our assistance. Those same guidelines are in place today, yet under the current laws, I must now choose whether to obey my professional ethics or the new state laws. Other medical and support professions are similarly trying to address this conundrum. Today, we have a group with us this evening who will help us guide ourselves in this direction. We'd like to first welcome Kemi Armejo Grover, the Education Director at Bridger Care. Welcome, Kemi.
Thank you so much. Yeah, my name is Kemi, and I've been the Education Director here at Bridger Care since 2015. And I'm kind of speaking on behalf of some of the trainings that we've offered and things that I've learned in our trainings about how to support LGBTQ plus folks, both in medical settings, in educational settings, and just in everyday life. And I use she, her pronouns. But I thought that I should not be the only voice on this call, since there are lots of people with great knowledge that I get to work with. So I'll introduce first Jonathan. Jonathan, do you want to tell us a little bit about who you are?
Hi, yes. My name is Jonathan Elliott. I have worked really closely with Kemi and Bridger Care to offer some of our trainings involving kind of like how to like work with LGBTQ plus patients in a medical setting, or how to empower and support LGBTQ plus youth in educational settings. So I've been doing this work with Kemi for about coming up on 2 years here soon, kind of drafting some of those trainings and offering those trainings. So I kind of speak from this background of education and outreach to these communities and the professionals who support them.
Welcome.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then we also have Dr. Katie Lowe here with us, who I will let introduce themselves.
Thanks for having me. My name is Katie Lowe. As Kemi said, my pronouns are she, her. I'm a pediatrician here in Montana. So I represent the Montana chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. And I've been very involved in advocating for gender diverse youth at the local, state, and national level as a pediatrician. I'm honored to be here.
We thank you for coming.
And that's all of us right now. We might have another person joining us in a little bit, but they're a student at the university, and they're at Montana State University, and they're running a little bit behind today. So we'll pop them in when they get here if they're able to.
Sure, sure. Well, we've got a good start on this, and I wonder if you could tell us, Cami, about how you came to work at Bridger Care and what the outreach is there.
Absolutely. I think this is a great question. What initially drew me to work at Bridger Care, which for anyone who doesn't know, is a Title X family planning clinic. So we see that folks for things like STI testing and treatment, birth control, we do gender-affirming care for adults, and just anything related to sexual and reproductive health. What initially drew me actually was not related to LGBTQ plus communities. It had to do with birth control because my mom had my sister when she was 17 and me when she was 18. And while I was very loved, my parents faced additional challenges that I really wanted to make sure other people could choose when and under what circumstances to have children. So that was what initially drew me, but within no time of starting working here, my heart really, as much as I still love to teach about birth control, a lot of my passion moved over to supporting LGBTQ plus communities. And I think what did it for me is I was pregnant when I first got this job. And so as a new parent, I experienced what I think a lot of new parents experience, where all children are their children all of a sudden. And I got the opportunity to work with a lot of fabulous teenage high school kids. And one of our high school kiddos was very openly gay. And he was also just one of the kindest and most generous humans you could ever meet. Everybody who kind of came in contact with him just smiled and immediately felt put at ease. And I would see him once a week, and often, you know, he was his normal bubbly self. And then sometimes he wasn't. He was so quiet and withdrawn. And when asking him why, he would say, you know, because he was openly gay, some kid at school maybe hopped in his face and said something terrible. And that just was really upsetting to me. And it was really upsetting, obviously. It was upsetting to me because it was so upsetting to him, just kind of seeing the effects that it would have on him for sometimes days afterwards, and knowing that that kind of accumulated on his mental health was very upsetting. And so decided that I would like the opportunity to work with other folks who are part of LGBTQ plus communities and other folks who are trying to support them to create trainings so that there's less of this happening in our schools and in our healthcare and in our communities in general. So started with the healthcare version of our training. At this point in time, we have trained more than 1,000 folks on how to provide affirming healthcare to LGBTQ plus communities. And we've been offering that since 2018. And then since about a year ago, we've offered trainings on the for folks working with youth, mostly in school systems, but also youth-serving providers in other areas. And in the last year, I think we've trained about 250 folks about how to support youth. And then just in the last couple of months, we've started to put together and offer community-wide trainings on just how to support someone you care about in general, just for the average person out there. Who has a child or a neighbor or a friend or a coworker that they want to make sure is getting supported, especially as we're going through this legislative session where things have been, there's been so much misinformation and so much violent language being directed at LGBTQ plus communities, and there's such a need for people to stand with these folks and say, you absolutely know who you are and you deserve to be supported exactly as you are. So I've had the opportunity at this point to work with about 40 different people that help us lead our LGBTQ plus allies training. And Jonathan and Dr. Lowe were just two of the, and 38 other amazing humans. So I get to learn from them all the time, and that makes me so happy.
That's so good to hear. And what really kind of highlights this discussion is that among LGBTQ adults and youth, there's an extraordinarily elevated risk of suicidal thoughts and behavior. There's a twofold risk of suicide attempts, and the current lifetime prevalence of suicide attempts for transgender adults is 40%. Think about that for a minute. And the research tells us that It's even higher and the highest during the teen years in the early 20s. So what you're doing is extremely needed and possibly urgent and with great depth to the effort.
Absolutely. And I feel like Jonathan or Dr. Lowe might have some more light to shed on some of those statistics, and I'm happy to turn it over to one of you if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, I can talk a bit about the statistics. This is Dr. Lowe speaking. You're right, the suicide rate is incredibly high. 40% is often quoted. The Trevor Project just released some new data showing that about 50% of trans kids seriously consider suicide. So that's an incredibly high, horrible number. At the same time, I'd like to point out we also have a lot of research on the hopeful side that shows the difference that having access to healthcare can make. So, you know, one study recently released showed that for trans youth who have access to gender-affirming healthcare, their suicide risk decreases by 70%.
Magnificent. Wow.
Yeah. So there's a lot of hope out there. We also have a lot of research that shows if trans kids feel supported by their family, by their school, by their community, when they're called by the correct name and pronoun, all of those things significantly decrease that suicide risk. So I like to bring light to all the things we can do to bring that number way down.
Thank you for that work. I know we had Mr. Carl Rosten on the show talking about, just in general, he's the statewide director for suicide prevention, and just in general, he was saying that since COVID, there's a fourfold increase in youth suicide attempts and access. And so I think for this particular group, it would, of course, like you said, be even higher without the care and the support of their families and their schools.
Yeah, and I think that's where the suicide risk comes from, is what the studies have been saying is not so much, it's not that being part of an LGBTQ plus community is a mental health challenge in itself. It's when other people are discriminating against them or being violent against them, whether with words or actions, and feeling unsafe at school and feeling unsafe at work and in all those places, and that constant oppression and the internalized oppression becomes mental illness because how else? I mean, that's where most mental illness comes from. in general, but also for that community especially. So, yeah, having supportive communities means that people just move through life, and it's another aspect of their identity, like so many other identities that we hold.
And in fact, there was one study he presented where trans kids, if they had family support and were in a supportive school situation, were really typically no different emotionally and educationally than other kids, if they had that support.
Yes, that is so true. And I think as so much of the narrative about trans kids talks about their depression, anxiety, and suicidality, I also really like to point out, once again, when trans kids have support and access to health care, lots of trans kids are thriving, and they are loved by their communities, and they're supported, and they're accepted, and they're then able to just go live their life and kind of attend to what we pediatricians say, attend to their normal developmental tasks of childhood, academics, building relationships, learning leadership skills. So I really want to point out lots of trans kids are thriving too, the ones who have support and who have access to health care.
Yes, and we've had several on this radio show who talked about their busy, happy, successful lives as LGBTQ identified citizens. Yes. I was wondering, Dr. Lowe, what impact the current legislative efforts might be having for your practice, and also I wanted us to take a moment, and Dr. Wood Arliss, could you give the emergency phone numbers for anybody out there who might be down and feeling discouraged? What number do they call now?
With the new telephone system, you know, I think it's 988. Have I got that correct?
Yes.
Is that what you all have as a suicide crisis line, is 988?
I believe that is correct also, yeah.
And locally, for the Help Center, 211, they deal with a variety of problems and are very helpful. So I would say 988 is the general overall U.S. national number. 211 gives more information on specifics on getting resources, support systems locally. But I believe that's it.
The Trevor Project also does a lot of fantastic work with LGBTQ plus youth suicide prevention. I don't know their phone number off the top of my head, but just Trevor Project, if people...
I happen to have that phone number right here for the Trevor Project.
You do, I love it.
You betcha.
Yeah.
Online social networking community for LGBTQ youth 13 to 24 years is 1-866-488-7386. And let's remind each of us, we want to go back over that toward the end of the program. So if you didn't catch that, get out a pencil and we'll go back over that. Also, you might want to jot down that in an effort to address these problems and these needs, our radio station, KGVM, is hosting a mental health fair at the Gallatin Valley Mall on May 20th. And the Help Center, the Montana Psychological Association, HRDC, and others will be there, and included will be a depression screening and referral system for somebody who's looking for help or for help for a loved one. So that's kind of new on the horizon, but it's one attempt to address this situation.
Question for you. This mental health fair sounds fantastic on May 20th. Do you know what time it is?
From 11 to 4 at the Gallatin Valley Mall, and everyone will be there as people come in. There'll be prizes for children, and there'll be a strong referral system, and we'd like to invite you all to come and join us if you'd like, because we're going to be just reaching out to everybody coming in that day.
And what makes me so excited about this is the date of it, because as much as advertising is just starting to go out, Bozeman is going to hold its first Pride. It's not just one event. It's Pride series of events around that time. And on May 20th, there are absolutely Pride events happening downtown Bozeman, starting at the library, I believe, at 11 a.m. And then there's going to be a block party downtown, resource tables of folks supporting LGBTQ plus community members. And I think that pairs so perfectly with what's happening over at the Gallatin Valley Mall around mental health, because I believe some of the stores as well, that's still all in flux, that some of the stores will be showing support for LGBTQ plus members on May 20th.
Oh, excellent.
Mm-hmm. There, too. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's exciting to hear, and I just want to mention, too, that May is Better Mental Health Month, so it's also a good time for all of us to focus on getting better in Gallatin Valley.
I wanted to ask, is there any action plan, or who's in charge of it, to begin to fight what has gone on in this current legislature?
Yes, I can speak to that. Yes, there are plans. One bill that has passed in Montana and the governor has signed into law is the bill banning health care for trans and gender diverse youth. So this has been signed into law. That being said, it's important to know it does not take effect until October 1st. So this health care remains legal until October 1st. And the ACLU has released a statement stating that they are preparing a lawsuit against that law that is expected to be filed very soon. And so with that, I wouldn't be surprised if they also file an injunction, meaning they ask the court to not let this law go into effect until the lawsuit can work its way through the court. So, you know, as a pediatrician, I'm hopeful that there's a good chance this law will never become effective because the ACLU, again, has publicly said they will be fighting this in the court.
Great.
Dr. Lowe, I wanted to ask if you could, for the listening audience, not all of them understand what goes into young person's transgender care. And if you could kind of go over just a light going over what the treatment regimen actually is so that we could dispel a lot of the fears that are out there that might not be valid.
Sure, I'd be happy to. So a lot of people talk about gender-affirming healthcare. What that is, basically, is healthcare that medical providers provide patients that affirms their gender. And as you can imagine, that is very individualized. So there is no one set answer here to this question because, like all medical care, this is individualized care and depends on what the patient needs and what their goals are. So gender-affirming healthcare can simply consist of calling a patient by the name and pronouns that they ask to be called by. It might be simply talking to them about their gender, what they're exploring with their gender. It might be talking about things like changing their hairstyle or their clothes, if that's what they want to talk about. For some patients, if it's appropriate for them, it can entail medication to help align their physical body with their inner gender identity. There are a few different medications we can use to help change their physical body in that way. But it's important to know that not everybody even wants those medications. So it's really individualized healthcare, like all healthcare. This healthcare also, it's important for people to know, this is evidence-based healthcare that is endorsed by every major medical organization in the country. This is the standard of care for us medical providers. This is routine healthcare for us, like all pediatric care is routine healthcare. Individualized, it's developmentally appropriate healthcare always. And it's also important, I think, for people to know that if medications are appropriate for a patient, we always need parental consent before we can start a patient on any medication related to gender.
May I ask you to...
And I don't want to interrupt the flow.
Oh, go ahead.
Very good. Yeah, we have found... Well, we haven't found Ace. Ace has arrived. Happy to let Ace introduce themselves, and glad they could join us for a portion of the show, because I know that school gets in the way sometimes. Funny story about that.
All right, yeah. So I'm Ace. I am a trans non-binary student athlete at Montana State University. And I've been working with BridgerCare a bit, last couple of years now, I think, for education allies and just helping, you know, spread the word and educate about the LGBT community, because it's my community, and I think it's really important to talk about and actually give correct information from people who know what they're actually talking about. And so when I was told about the opportunity, I said I'd come give my input where I could.
Welcome. I wanted someone to, for the listening audience at a simple level, to tell the difference between gender and sex. There's so much confusion still.
So I'll chime in on this one. So sex or like sex assigned at birth is the term that we oftentimes use, is something that like the physical primary sexual and secondary sexual characteristics that people have. So for example, the reason why we call it sex assigned at birth is oftentimes when a person is born, a doctor looks at somebody's genitals and is like, oh, it's a boy or it's a girl. And then secondary sex characteristics are like those parts that are, I shouldn't say boy or girl, I should say male or female. And secondary sexual characteristics are those things that come about during puberty. So like the development of different kinds of body hair, the deepening of voice, the development of breasts, that sort of thing. Those are all secondary sexual characteristics. So these are all of sex is all of those like biological factors, where gender is this more socially constructed element. Gender is all of our social norms regarding what makes a man and a woman. And those are all these like cultural things, all these stereotypes that exist, all of the gender roles, and all of that entails. That is more gender. So if anybody has anything to add to that, please chime in.
One thing you might also add, which people also don't understand, is what intersex is.
Sorry, Arliss. For a moment there, it was very choppy, and I'm not sure why. Could you repeat the question?
Yes, about intersex, a person who is born with two sexual characteristics. Born with both, I think, a vagina as well as a penis.
Oh, God. So there are many, many different ways to be intersex. So there are, and some of them aren't always immediately apparent when an individual is born. So so one form of intersex is, yes, somebody does have a penis and a vagina. But some forms of intersex are only, like, those people only discover those during puberty or even later on in life when they go on to have children. I think there's like hundreds of different ways to be intersex, everything ranging from hormone insensitivities to different chromosomal arrangements to all kinds of different kinds of intersex. One really interesting fact about intersex is the same percentage of the population that are natural redheads is all that's the same amount of people that are intersex. So not saying that all redheads are intersex, but it's an equal number of people that are. So you've probably met people who are intersex and you wouldn't even know.
Sure. And we noticed that the one codicil that's been added to the new laws was to delete intersex individuals from the proscribed changes. Have you noticed that going on, Jonathan?
Yes, I took a really close look at a lot of the language of these bills. They took out the language particularly pertaining to intersex individuals because they are particularly trying to target very closely and discriminate really closely against transgender people. They see them as the quote-unquote issue, and they're trying to word these bills in such a way to leave out intersex people so as to avoid court challenges or backlash or anything like that. I actually had a really... So the wording of these bills gets really weird, particularly SB 99, the one that limits healthcare to trans youth. They kind of harkening back to when we were talking about, like, what does gender affirming care look like? They use a really, like, they hit, like, all the boxes. Like, they hit a lot of, they went down, like, a lot of the different aspects of gender affirming healthcare. They said that they define gender-affirming care in the bill as a personalized healthcare modality utilizing counseling, speech therapy, hormonal, and surgical interventions. So they hit every potential aspect of gender-affirming care. But they did so in a way without recognizing a few key realities of what gender-affirming care looks like for trans and non-binary youth. First of all, surgical intervention is incredibly, incredibly rare, so much so as to be unheard of. So this fear-mongering that they're doing by including surgical intervention is kind of, it's a scare tactic. And all of the other methods that they suggested are all very much evidence-based, personalized care. No individual is going to utilize all of them, or not all individuals are going to utilize all of them. But all pieces of those, including puberty blockers, have been deemed safe by the American Academy of Pediatrics. And there's a lot of careful, personalized healthcare that goes into ensuring that these interventions are effective and are working for the patient. So it's crazy what these bills are doing and limiting for trans youth.
There is study after study to show the efficacy of the methods being used and the value, and that they are safe. Also, I read today that puberty blockers are reversible. If a young person decides, well, actually, I changed my mind, at that point, they could still make that decision. Am I correct in that?
Yes, you're absolutely correct.
Yeah, and I would also say with puberty blockers, I think that is a big misconception out there that they are irreversible. So, yes, they are fully reversible. We pediatricians, medical providers, have been using puberty blockers for decades, since 1980, for a variety of reasons in medicine. This is nothing new. These medicines have been proven safe for decades and effective for decades, and yet they are fully reversible. So puberty blockers are a really nice option for kids, for youth or teenagers. First of all, there's no medical treatment until a teenager has started puberty. But puberty blockers are a really nice way to simply pause puberty so that that youth does not experience permanent physical changes. It simply pauses their innate puberty and gives everyone time to figure out what is right for that youth in regards to puberty. So it's a really nice way just to slow things down, put a pause on everything, figure out what's best for the child. And yes, if then that child goes off the puberty blocker, their innate puberty simply picks right back up.
And are puberty blockers used with other medical conditions besides gender transition?
Yeah, like I was saying, you know, puberty blockers have been used for decades for other reasons as well. So another common reason puberty blockers are used are for kids who are experiencing precocious puberty. So that means kids who are starting puberty at a very young age, like age 5 or 6, when something is going wrong and their body is undergoing these secondary sex characteristics at an age where it is not developmentally appropriate. Or at older ages for other reasons as well, when it is in the best interest of the child to pause their puberty.
Would the new laws change your ability to use puberty blockers for those children?
The new law would allow us to prescribe puberty blockers for cisgender kids, but not for transgender kids.
Oh my.
So that is straightforward discrimination.
Yeah. Yeah. Well. Woo. Well.
I was asking, and I think I know my own answer to this, but were the philosophical reasons the basis for this insane movement by many of the legislators? It sounds like something from a fanatical religious right. Is that where it's coming from, or is there some other motive other than kind of say, oh, this is right and that's wrong? What is your take on that?
I think it really kind of depends, to be honest. Like growing up as a trans youth, like, I've kind of faced all sorts of different reasons. A lot of them I have kind of noticed, they do tend to use religion as a reason to spread this hate. But as someone who, I grew up religious, and once I started looking into it, really none of this religion preaches hate like this. And so as I've grown, I really, to me, it just seems honestly as hate and as control. And, you know, they'll use religion as a reason to, I guess, like, back that hate, or it kind of gives them an excuse of why they, quote, like, should be allowed to be hateful, I guess, towards certain groups of people. So I think a lot of people will say it's religion, but I personally do think it's just people using religion as an excuse to spread their own hate that they have within themselves that, honestly, they need to deal with themselves and not spread it on to other people.
I wonder...
A couple more things.
Oh, go ahead.
I think was a... Yeah, I agree with all of that stuff. And there are absolutely religious communities that are very welcoming to transgender, non-binary, and other LGBTQ plus individuals. So not all folks who belong to any specific religion or any specific faith community necessarily feel that way. And so it is kind of interesting that there's that split there. I think another thing, too, that was so interesting to me that I heard from someone once, which made innate sense to me, is that sometimes people who have had to, who have felt like they had to follow strict gender stereotypes super strongly, really hate it when other people aren't, because it's kind of like, if I have to, you should have to. And maybe as, you know, a person, I have felt I'm supposed to act X, Y, and Z ways based on the fact that I'm a man or a woman. And I haven't liked it. I've never liked it, but I've had to fight against it my whole life. And so you should have to, too.
So like a
in some way, that ignorance and that need for others to suffer, too.
A reaction formation. I notice that almost all of these laws are promulgated by old white guys and legislators. And I just wonder how many of them have their own gender identity issues. That's a mean thing to say, perhaps.
And I wonder... go ahead.
I came across a very unique take not too long of why these bills seem to be popping up across, not just in Montana, but across the country. So Gillian Brandstetter, communication strategist for the ACLU, actually had a really unique take when talking to, in an interview with a New York Times columnist. She said that this is part of a larger political strategy. This is a culture war kind of ballot box issue to try and drum up, you know, political support for a broader kind of legislative agenda and support for, you know, the Republican Party. There's been a couple different attempts to try and, like, make other culture war issues stick, like immigration, or kind of all these kind of this backlash against critical race theory. And it seems they've landed on kind of anti-trans bills as their go-to issue to try and, like, be the spear point for a broader legislative agenda. And that was her take on that I thought we should, I think that's an important counterpoint to this idea. Like Cammy was saying, it's not like this is necessarily like a genuine outcry from religious communities or just wantonly spreading hate thing. This is also part of, we have to keep in mind that this is a political issue, that they're trying to make human rights into a political issue to get votes and turn out a vote.
I agree, because back when I was mentioning going to graduate school, and we were given training in how to treat voice changes, I went to church 3 times a week. We were very much integrated into the church community, and it never occurred to me that I would infringe my views on those of any of my patients. And I think that was the general concept. There was none of this outrage, which I agree with you. What changed here, and I believe it is, the political menu that we need a tool. And so therefore I'm wondering if the outrage isn't the latest tool, like you said, in the political agenda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really, once I came across that, I really put in all of these bills and why they are cropping up just now and all across the nation, it put it into a much broader kind of social and political context.
I've read several reviews that, in general, the American public, the percentages show more support than for the freedom here for LGBTQ than those who are against that support. What have your findings been along those lines, group?
I think one thing I can add on to that is when we do our trainings, a lot of our trainings, we do an anonymous survey at the beginning, and we ask people, are you or someone you love part of an LGBTQ plus community? And it has never failed to amaze me that in any group we walk into, at least 80% of people say that is true for them. And so most of us either are or know somebody who is part of one of these communities. So I certainly don't, or at least that's been our experience. And so I certainly feel like you are correct that the general public is much more supportive than the politicians that are making these laws, I guess, if you will. And I think a lot of people don't necessarily know what's going on or know how to engage in the legislative process or have time to do so. You know, a lot of people are moving through the world, living their own lives, and they don't have time to drop things to go to Helena 2 days later to show up at a hearing to say, wait, what's happening? And so a lot of stuff is happening without the average person noticing.
And I would just like to add, as we talk about this legislation against trans and gender diverse people sweeping the country, you know, we've talked a bit about our ban here in Montana against health care for trans youth, but it's going well beyond health care also. So here in Montana, other bills that have passed that are against specifically trans kids. I'm a pediatrician, so I follow most closely the ones that affect our youth. We have passed a ban on books here in Montana. So that means some books that might talk about gender identity might be pulled from schools, and schools may not be able to talk as much about gender identity, which research shows harms the mental health of trans kids. They've also passed a bill here in Montana that allows students to bully trans kids by insisting on calling them by their birth name and birth pronouns. So it's allowing for bullying against trans kids. They've also passed a bill here that defines sex in a legal way, and it defines sex in a way that excludes trans and non-binary people. So that means legally, those people are basically written out of having legal rights. So those are just some examples of how far-reaching these anti-trans bills are becoming, well beyond health care.
And I know I'm not supposed to ask the questions, but I'm going to ask the question, which is, I know the defining sex bill included a whole host of things. Could you talk a little bit about, I mean, it's not just in one place that it's being changed. Can you talk a little bit about what some of those places are, or like how many different places they would change, that sort of thing?
Yeah, it changes, I think, 41 different sections of Montana law. So basically anywhere where it says sex, they insert this new definition of sex. So the consequences of that are so far-reaching. So that means that basically people who do not fit into one of these two boxes of sex, such as trans people, are not legally protected from discrimination in general. It's going to be a lot harder to get accurate legal documents, such as birth certificates and driver's licenses. It would affect even how they're listed after they die, as one legislator continually pointed out. So it really just takes them out of the law altogether and leaves them vulnerable to any sort of discrimination.
I'd like to say I really respect Zoe Zephyr and David Gianforte, the son of the governor, for their very vocal expressions against what happened.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, I have a quote from David. He says, "It's bizarre to me to read the press release that my father put out. He talks about compassion toward children, the youth of Montana, while simultaneously taking away health care from the youth in Montana. It's basically a contradiction in my mind."
Absolutely, and I think when these discussions are being had, people often go to, you know, what if kiddos change their mind and this shouldn't be done quickly? And as I think Dr. Lowe has already talked about, most of the time it's not something, you know, there's a lot of things, it's often very social to begin with and maybe puberty blockers. It's not things that can't be changed later. And I think it's most important to know when a doctor is willing to provide care. I've heard, and I'd love it if Katie would explain it a little bit further, but that we say a child knows their gender when they are consistent, insistent, and persistent. It's not some fleeting thing that's like they said it once and the doctor's going to say, quick, let's get you on gender-affirming hormones, right? Do you want to talk about that a little bit, Katie?
Yeah, that is one other important part of gender-affirming care, as we're speaking in the healthcare setting, is that we see patients many times over many visits before any medical treatment would ever be started. Additionally, patients are often working with a mental health therapist over multiple visits. So there's many evaluations and assessments done with multiple professionals, typically, before any medical treatment is started. So this is a very slow process. It often takes a long time before medication is even started, months, perhaps years. So this is very slow, thoughtful, methodical care, again, like all medical care. This is really routine medical care and individualized. One other thing I wanted to point out about the ban on gender-affirming care, we've talked a lot about how that hurts trans youth. It also hurts all youth in Montana, because with this bill being passed, I know a number of physicians in the state who are considering leaving the state now that our legislature is intervening in medical care. So if we lose, we only have a few pediatric endocrinologists in the state. If we lose even one of them because they don't want to practice in the state where the legislators are dictating medical care, if we lose even one of them, that leaves our state with a decreased ability to treat all of our kids who have endocrine problems. So all the kids out there with type 1 diabetes who need to see an endocrinologist are going to have a harder time getting care if one of them leaves the state. Also, a lot of primary care pediatricians are debating leaving the state. We don't have a lot of primary care pediatricians here in Montana. If we lose even a couple of them, all of their patients are now going to be left without a primary care pediatrician. So this new law absolutely harms trans kids, and it absolutely harms cisgender kids as well.
I think that's an excellent point. I mean, we already know that rural communities, there's research that suggests that rural communities already face healthcare disparities compared to their urban counterparts, especially rural LGBTQ communities. So having this exodus of healthcare providers and then also propping up all these extra, you know, hurdles for trans and non-binary people to access healthcare, particularly in these rural communities, or people from these rural communities, that's just going to like exacerbate a lot of these health inequities that we see. I think that that's like the ultimate outcome of what we could see from, you know, a continued legislative effort to marginalize and restrict the rights and access to healthcare for LGBTQ people.
I wondered if some of you with this group could tell me, when does a typical kid who might think about a gender change typically, is it when they're very young, or is it something that happens over the teenage years, or what is your experience with how this onset is for a gender difference?
I think it definitely is something that I think is different for every kid, but very common. It is something very young. And I think a big issue that honestly has made me really uncomfortable with all of these politics is people try and sexualize it so much, when we need to remember that, like, it is sometimes just really young kids that maybe want to wear a dress when it's not normal for them to wear a dress, or wear camouflage when, you know, a typical seen as a little girl wouldn't wear that. And so I, from what I've experienced, it does happen a lot in really young kids. And I think it's just important that we need to let kids be kids. There's no harm in letting someone wear a certain color clothes or anything like that. And, like, for me personally, I've always been super masculine growing up. And I was, like, forced myself to wear dresses, and I was just miserable because I wasn't fitting in. And so I knew as, like, a young kid, but I didn't really know until maybe teenage years, the vocabulary necessarily to describe that. So to a lot of people, my, like, social transition didn't necessarily happen until late high school, probably. But, you know, it was something that I could tell I didn't fit the stereotypical little girl that people expected since I was a young, young kid. So I honestly, that's, like, the biggest thing I say is just let kids be kids. If they're not harming themselves or others, like, let them wear what they want to wear and, you know, play with who they want to play with, and just let them enjoy life and stop sexualizing all of these, like, different laws that they're trying to put in.
Well said, dear. And I think, you know, when you consider that this is something that most of our folks know from an early age, that it's not necessarily, it shouldn't necessarily be in the realm of the political, because it's something about that individual that's special and different.
And yeah, I know medical studies have shown too that between the ages of 3 and 5 is when a lot of kids start to solidify what their gender identity is, with the toys that they're playing with the friends that they're choosing, with the clothes that they're wearing, like Ace said. And their parents are still very much in control of so much of that, so they may not feel like they have a lot of ability to change that. I'm also going to say I really like what you said, Ace, about just let kids be kids, because I think that's the thing, too, that people say, you know, but if you encourage a kid, if you tell them they can be whatever they want to be, then, you know, they might decide they're transgender when they're not. And I think about my kiddo, who will be 7 at the end of this month, and, you know, sometimes she's, of all the things, a unicorn doggy kitty all rolled into one. It's a thing. And I support that. So if she said one day, I'm a boy, why do I have a hard time supporting that? And if the next day she was a girl, why would I have a hard time supporting that? It's just going with the flow of, like, where are we today? You're a kid. Be you. Do you. We'll worry about labels and identity and all of the things when you're older. Right now, just do you. And eventually, when you have the words to express who you are as a human, you'll come out with them. And that's, let's not force this on anybody. Nobody wants to force it on young kids. They would just want to let kids do their own thing and grow how they are.
Well said.
We have probably 3 or 4 more, pardon me, more minutes. I want everybody to be able to say everything you want to say. What else would you like to add?
I'm going to leave the microphone open for other people.
I would like to send a message of hope to families in the state who have a trans kid and are seeing all this legislation and know we have this new law banning healthcare, I want to send a message of hope that, again, this law may never take effect, that us, I can speak on behalf of pediatricians, we will continue to fight this forever, and we will help families in any way we can. So just want to get that message out there.
And hopefully the ACLU suit will be made, pardon me, will be made public soon, so that can add to the hope.
Absolutely.
I just wanted to go back over for anyone in the audience who might be feeling discouraged, a way to get some help would be to call 211 for local help or 988 for the suicide prevention line. Or if you are wanting to have a deeper discussion about gender, the Trevor Project is so helpful, and their number is 866-488-7386.
And tell us more before we end about the Pride celebrations around the time of the mental health fair.
Absolutely. They're being put on by our local drag community, and that's the group that is spearheading the majority of events, but there are lots of organizations and individuals putting on a variety of things. There will be comedy shows, drag shows, both family-friendly and for adults only. There are going to be trainings on how to be an LGBTQ plus advocate. Like I said, there will be the block party and prize stroll in downtown Bozeman on May 20th. The best place to go is to their social media. I believe it's the ISCSM, and it stands for the Imperial Sovereign Court of the State of Montana. I did it.
Perfect.
I always forget what it's called, Imperial Sovereign Court of the State of Montana, ISCSM. But their social media, just starting in the last day or two, is starting to roll out all the events that are happening, because it's all taking place between around May 15th and May 21st. And there's so much going on in the Bozeman area at that time that I couldn't, unfortunately, list it all off. But if you, ISCSM social media, they'll lead you right.
If anybody wants to donate to any organization to help with this project, who would that be, ACLU or others?
Oh, that's an excellent question. Kind of depends on what you want to do. ACLU is more for lawsuits, and you may not necessarily see the direct result of your contribution, but there's several great organizations in the Bozeman area, too, if that's where you are. Pride House is an organization that recently opened that's working to create after-school programming for LGBTQ plus youth. Help me out here, all the people.
I also mess it up all the time.
Yeah.
ISCSM. They also, along with all the information about the events going on, they're also usually a pretty good contact. And if you direct message them or something like that, usually someone's very excited to kind of talk about different options that you also have as well in the Bozeman, Galton Valley area.
And they are accepting donations. They are a nonprofit.
Yes.
So if you wanted to make a donation towards the Pride happenings here in May, you can direct a donation to ISCSM as well. And if you can't remember what it is, give the Galton Valley's May 4th and 5th, which is all the nonprofits.
Absolutely.
There's so many of them, and they will be part of that.
We really thank you all so very much for this conversation today. We'd like to do it again. Hopefully we can set aside some more time to do this. Everyone listening, please be aware of what's going on around you politically, and love everybody. Love others as you love yourself, some famous saying by someone. And continue to tune in to KGVM 95.9, KGVM.org. Thank you very much.